Hello, and welcome to the Soft Tattooed Millionaires Podcast. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm joined by my older, shorter brother, Max. Max, how's it going?
Ouch. No one ever calls me short.
You're not short.
Or shorter. I'm not short. Weird. And this whole time, I feel like this means that you've secretly been thinking that you're taller than me.
I am taller than like, you.
And then and literally holding that above me. And I never realized that till now.
Yeah, we need to move on from this as quickly as possible. All right, so the hunt for the U.S. men's national team GM is officially underway. This week it was reported that both Ali Curtis and Ernie Stewart have been interviewing for the job. So Curtis won the Herman Trophy in 1999, sort of a short career in the MLS, spent most of his professional life working in various league offices. He was the sporting director for the New York Red Bulls between 2014 and 2017. And then for those of you who are
left after creative differences with Jesse Marsh, American soccer hero Jesse Marsh, and him did not get along.
Is that really
interesting?
True?
That's true, yeah.
Oh, do you know anything else about that?
No, I saw that in his Wikipedia biography, so I don't know any of the details.
Huh, juicy. All right, well, for those of you who don't know who Ernie Stewart is, born and raised in the Netherlands, his father was an American airman, which allowed Ernie to play for the U.S. men's national team. From 1990 to 2004, he had over 100 caps, 17 goals, spent the majority of his career in the Netherlands, apart from two seasons at DC United. After his playing career, he was sort of the technical director for a couple different Dutch clubs, NAC Breda and AZ Alkmaar. Now he's the Philadelphia Union sporting director, and he has been since 2015. Max, do you have a preference for either of these guys? Are you just happy to see the process moving along?
Definitely happy to see the process moving along. I think it's too early to say whether or not I have a preference for them, but the thing that is encouraging is that they at least seem to be the right type of candidate. And what I mean by that is that too often with any high-profile soccer job, and often in American soccer, it seems to be the case that we can defer to people who are either known quantities, friendly American soccer quantities, or maybe to people with kind of good soccer playing resumes. Maybe that happens less often with the U.S. Soccer Federation, but a lot of big decisions about soccer management and soccer administration seems to defer to people who are like, oh yeah, this guy was a great player for a long time. He knows how to run a soccer team. And that just logically does not follow for me. So what I prefer to see is people with a strong track record running an organization and being good administrators. And so both of these guys fit that bill. And so that's the right kind of candidate that I want to see. And it shows perhaps that that the U.S. Soccer Federation is also deferring on American soccer expertise. And I don't mean that in a like, look at them, they're being so dumb, they're looking for American soccer people, like some people sort of mean, but rather that they're looking for people who have a lot of experience running MLS, who know the American soccer system really well. So, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that can definitely be a strength for a candidate.
Mm-hmm. You got to think that if Curtis gets the job, then Jesse Marsh is immediately out of the running for the U.S. men's national team job, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, I slightly prefer Ernie Stewart just because of the whole European experience thing. I think he's going to favor youth and understand the importance of European experience for our young Americans. But similar to you, I'm not really that worried. All right. Before we move on to three on, three off, do you have anything you want to add?
Yes, I want to tell a little story. Strangely enough, our mother visited me in Chicago, and when she comes and visits me, I take her to usually I try to take her to a museum in a part of Chicago she would not normally go to, and I took her down to Pilsen and to the National Museum of Mexican Art that is down there, which is a great museum. And as we were leaving Pilsen, I looked out the car window and I saw blurring past me. And I'd say that I go to Pilsen frequently and I like that neighborhood, but for some reason I have never seen this before. Maybe it's a new thing, but as we were driving away, I look out the car window and I saw this giant mural on the side of the road that was a mural with four soccer players on it. And I was like, oh, a soccer mural. And then like suddenly it rather slowly and blurrily, it crystallized in my vision, and I saw that the four soccer players, two were LA Galaxy and two were Toronto FC, and it happened so fast I couldn't see who all they were, except that the largest, baldest person there was Michael Bradley, who is like the central figure of this mural in Pilsen.
That's so incredible. And it just
blew my mind that somewhere in America there's a mural of Michael Bradley.
Yeah, I wonder if it's Chicago is harboring so much love for Bob Bradley because of his Fire days that this whoever made this mural has kept up his admiration with even for his son. I don't know.
I can't even. It doesn't make any sense. And I mean, it's Toronto FC too. I don't even know. It makes me wonder, like, what is the story behind this mural? And for those who don't know, like, Pilsen is like the Mexican American neighborhood, one of the large Mexican American neighborhoods in Chicago. And so, I would assume, if anything, it wouldn't be MLS, you know, figures of a soccer mural or anything like that. And so, it just raises more questions than it answers. But it's also awesome. So I'm gonna try to look into this and see if I can dig up what the story is behind this mural and who painted it.
Yeah, I mean, we're worse investigative journalists than we are podcasters, but I say you need to find out what happened.
If I could get this interview, I mean, this is basically my good night and good luck journalism.
Hard hitting.
Yeah.
All right. Thus Bad Begins, and now it continues with 3 on, 3 off. Every week we pick out 3 people, places, or things that have either delighted us in the world of U.S. soccer or which have left us deep in the painful yet all too familiar pit of lowered expectations. Max, do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
Let me go first, and I'm going to say number one, Tim Howard's still tucking in his shirt. Like, it's just one of those things that strikes you. Like, you know, you've known Tim Howard forever, and then you look at him, you're like, he tucks his shirt in a really particular way that just says Tim Howard. And I was watching that game and just like, man, it's like slightly baggy where it seems like reminiscent of 90s keepers, but still it's kind of trim in this way. It's a particular look that Tim Howard pulls off in the way he tucks in his shirt. And I guess I'm putting that on the field. I don't know, something about that was nostalgic for me or also intriguing.
So Tim Howard's personal sense of style on the field. I would agree with that. Awesome.
I mean, all right, who are you taking off?
Well, I think I'm going to take off Jason Kreis because, well, anyway, so full disclosure, we tried to record this podcast earlier. It didn't work. We were recording while...
And it was Jason Kreis's GD fault.
I know, for real. But I mean, as you're recording the first time, Orlando City was mounting this incredible comeback in the last 10 minutes of the game. But anyways, if you were watching the game on TV, you heard Taylor Twellman and Adrian Healy discuss the fact that Jason Kreis has blamed the Lions' poor run of form at home on the fact that teams love coming to Orlando. Jason Kreis says that the home supporters are too loud, the stadium is too beautiful, it's, you know, it energizes the competition who are used to playing in sort of like your average half-full MLS stadium. I think that this is the dumbest thing that someone could say. I cannot believe that he's denigrating his own fans, and his attitude seems to inherently dislike the growth of the league.
You know why teams may like coming to Orlando?
Why?
Because they're like, oh, we get to play against that chump, Jason Kreis.
Yeah, that weak-minded.
Yeah, exactly. What a weak-minded fool.
Yeah.
Can you imagine blaming the awesome, loyal fans that have stuck with you despite a mediocre performance?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Especially watching the scenes from today when all of the fans were still there in the 90th minute to watch this amazing comeback. Dom Dwyer scores the third goal. It ends 3-2. I mean... come on, those people deserve all the credit in the world.
This smacks of the desperate excuses that are like only a master manipulator has in their playbook. This is like the Mourinho excuse when like I'm trying to recall like Mourinho's logic for one of his Champions League losses, and it's just like it makes no sense, and I'm rambling, but It's the kind of manipulation that only someone like a Jose Mourinho or a Sam Allardyce is able to pull off, where they lose and they're like, well,
yeah,
we wouldn't have lost if it hadn't been for those damn fans who are so good.
That's what, I don't think
I was not expecting that at all. Where did that come from?
Oh, how the mighty have fallen that Jose Mourinho is now in the same camp as Sam Allardyce.
Well, I mean, there's like
that art of deflection, like Arsene Wenger being a specialist in failure. You know, I've heard it, you know, like it's only unjust penalties that are given, that kind of thing. Other podcasters have said that before, but yeah, I understand what you mean.
Yeah, it's just this ability not just to deflect, but to have invent an excuse and sort of be like, well, of course. The fan, other teams love playing here. Our fans are so good.
Yeah.
What?
I think, yeah, but there's a difference between like deflection that harms
deflection
nobody.
And making up some reason that is just beyond logic.
Yeah, that actually harms your fan base. Like when Arsene Wenger says that penalty was not a penalty, or you know that goal is offside, that doesn't come back at the organization, right? Like there's a difference between this isn't even like deflection. This is friendly fire.
It's not like throwing someone under a bus, because throwing someone under a bus is like an active action. You take someone and you throw them under the wheels of the bus. This is like lulling someone to sleep and then already having driven the bus over them. It's like, what? That happened? How are we able to? What? Okay.
Yeah. What a chump. Anyways, what's the second thing you're putting on the field?
I'm putting on Alonzo Davies, a Canadian who, if he was American, we would all be going crazy about Davies. He's watched the Whitecaps game, and he was just bombing up and down the sidelines, played left back, active the whole game, constant threat, able to turn the corner, whipping in crosses, the kind of play where just like if he gets a yard of space, he can just fire in a really hard cross into the box and make something happen. So he played a really great game in a game that was particularly challenging, I think, for a young player. It was a really ugly game. Many yellow cards should have been given, but were not given in that game. And the whole game, he was level-headed and continuing to play his game, despite sometimes cheap shots being thrown at him. He never even seemed to be bothered or wanted to get into sort of like a shouting or pushing match. So really mature play from a young player who's still working out some kinks in his game, but looking like he's as advertised.
Awesome. If one time switch, that's all I'm going to say to him.
Too late for that.
Oh, no. All right.
Very late for that.
Yeah. The second thing that I'm going to take off the field, I think I'm going to go with the Montreal Impact back line. So the Revs pounded the Impact 4-0. But what was really interesting about this game is that Evan Bush saves a penalty and he makes two really incredible saves. So it's possible this game should have ended 7-0, but the Impact were crushed after that early red card to Tader. So I understand you go a man down, but for the first 60 minutes, Evan Bush is keeping the Impact in this game, right? It's only at 1-0. They haven't conceded that second goal. He goes ahead and he saves the penalty. Like, you have to be stronger as a team mentally. Like, you cannot allow that kind of mollywomping to go on. That is a word that my wife does not know, by the way. Susie doesn't. I asked her that recently. She looked at me like I was nuts. But anyway, so I'm going to say Montreal backline, they're always going to have a difficult year. It's kind of a weak unit. But, you know, when Evan Bush has a game like he does, I just... You know, I wish there was something to show for it. Not that I love Evan Bush or anything like that, but.
So do you have any thoughts about Remy Guardiola?
My thoughts on Remy Guardiola are that he's already exceeding expectations.
Okay.
Yeah,
explain.
I think that nobody would have thought that the Montreal Impact would be where they are right now. Like they've had 1-0 wins over both Toronto and Seattle, the two best teams from last year. Montreal is always going to give up goals. Their first game against Columbus, 3-2, Again, that could have gone either way. Really, this New England game is the outlier, right? This is the only game where they sort of behaved in a way that people have expected them to behave, and just sort of just capitulate goal after goal. The fact that they were defensively sound against Seattle and Toronto shows a lot of growth. I don't think that they've quite completed their rebuilding process. They haven't brought the number of players in that they would like, but the whole back room staff has changed except for one coach. It's going to be a process. I mean, I just love Montreal. Our grandma's from there. I love visiting there. I once got violently ill in a train station bathroom, but I still want to go back. Just a team
all
that I love.
All good reasons to root for a soccer team.
Yes, yes. You do not know pain until you have food poisoning on a Greyhound bus and you are being stopped.
That's actually the origin story for the name Montreal Impact.
I mean, there was a 4-hour delay at the border for some reason, and I just remember like the bus driver saying,
"Sorry, we can't let this bus across the border. There's a bathroom situation here, and
the bathroom was out of order.
Some hazardous material that's crossing the border."
I know. I mean, je me souviens. I remember very well the. All right, it's ridiculous. What's the next thing you're putting on the field?
Did not expect to go down this route. But no, the next thing I'm putting on the field is VAR. Last week, I took it off the field out of frustration that there was so much ambiguity about the Zlatan, was he offsides or not. A second goal, but this week putting it on, and that kind of sums up the way I think and feel about VAR. Sometimes I'm like, yeah, and sometimes I'm like, well, it could be a little better. But this week it was great. Sebastian Blanco was initially given a yellow card, his second of the game, and taken off for a simulation. However, VAR did its little VAR thing, and the ref stopped, reviewed the play, and actually awarded a penalty that rather than a second yellow card. And so basically a complete 180 decision from sending the team down to 10 men to giving them a penalty. So getting things right. That was fantastic.
Yep. All under 45 seconds. All right.
Yeah.
My last thing that I am taking off the field, it's a little weird, but it's the Golden Spike Man of the Match Award from Atlanta. And that is because it is not historically accurate. The Golden Spike was used to join the Union and Pacific Railroads to form the first transcontinental railroad, and this happened at Promontory Summit, Utah, which is 66 miles northwest of Salt Lake City. I understand that Atlanta is a railroad city, it's how it got its start, but the Golden Spike was nowhere near Atlanta. It's on the other side of the country. Every time I see the Golden Spike be awarded, my brain hurts. It would be like if Boston had their man of the match sign a copy of the Declaration of Independence, even though that took place in Philly. So while I really wanted to complain about Walker Zimmerman, so I'm going to, he had a terrible game. He's 8 inches taller than Joseph Martinez. Doesn't mark him, lets him have a free header at the back post. That height differential is like me and our oldest brother. then he does that. He lets Joseph Martinez have a free header. Then he gives up a penalty. So as much as I wanted to complain about Walker Zimmerman, he can stay on the field. Just stop giving out the Golden Spike, Atlanta United. You are not Utah. It doesn't make sense.
Okay. I appreciate your negativity, but I'm going to disagree with you. Every time I see the Golden Spike award going out, I think, I can't believe this even exists. It's fantastic. Like, there used to be a train, or there's still a train in the Houston Astros Stadium that was full of oranges and used to drive the train every time that someone hit a home run. I love that stuff. I don't need historical accuracy in whatever, you know, silly celebrations take place after a game. So I like the Golden Spike thing. I'm all for it. It doesn't have to be realistic or, I mean, who even knows what the Golden Spike is, the real one?
Most people, right? No, what?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. Never mind. I feel like a jackass, but I still don't like it. Anyways, let's move on. Let's talk about the actual champs of the MLS and Toronto, who played this last week in the CONCACAF Champions League, as did the New York Red Bulls. Toronto FC beat Club America 3-1, while the New York Red Bulls fell to Chivas by one goal to nil. Max, what were your thoughts on the CCL?
My thoughts were, while the game itself was, while the Toronto game itself was exciting and great to see an MLS team do well. Like, in some ways, the things that were most exciting to me were all of the, like, secondary things. The scuffle in the tunnel at halftime, the controversy about the Under Armour for the kits, all that stuff. And what it made me think was about how, like, a month ago, we were all sitting here and you're hearing all this kind of like murmurings about how, like, teams aren't taking the CONCACAF Champions League seriously. CONCACAF Champions League sucks. Look at Colorado. Look at Dallas, et cetera. And now suddenly it's like it's like WrestleMania where something's happening, like in the tunnel, like behind the scenes, and where like the Toronto police are getting involved, and there's all this kind of like wonderful like spectacle surrounding it. And in addition to there being good, compelling soccer, and in a lot of ways, it's just sort of a dream scenario for me, where it's just like not. It's just more soccer added on that I actually care about. So that game really typifies that to me. It shows me that, like, actually CONCACAF Champions League really is as good as we thought it could be. And Toronto is stepping up and delivering the kind of performance where we think that, yes, these are the standard bearers of MLS, and they're going to be able to put in a performance that puts them on par with Liga MX, hopefully, this season. So I've rambled on long enough. How do you feel about that game? / tell me your thoughts about Red Bulls.
Yeah, I mean, for the Toronto game, it was great to see them so in the heads of the Club America players, right? Sebastian Giovinco is the most hated man in all of Mexico City right now.
Exactly. Yes. In the Mexican neighborhood here in Chicago. They don't even put up his picture. It's Michael Bradley.
What I like about this game, I mean, first off, Miguel Herrera definitely deserves to be at WrestleMania. If you're going to have an enemy, you want your enemy to be as dramatic as possible, right? In order to sell the game, or in like a prize fight, like you want to build that public beef, right? And so today, Miguel Herrera came out and said, you know, the MLS is spending astronomical sums of money just trying to bridge the gap. It's ridiculous, you know. And if you just Google image search him,
that's so good.
I know, it's so good because
it's Jason Christ good, man.
Yeah, no, yeah, and much like Jason Christ, like, Miguel Herrera must be just shitting himself, right? Like, and that's what these outbursts come from. It's fear. So it's nice to be an MLS team that actually instills fear in an opponent. So what I thought
like, Herrera is basically like saying this kind of stuff, preparing for a loss at Azteca.
That's good.
He's giving himself a way out.
Yeah.
Where he's saying, like, oh, you know, how can we, you know, we're competing with MLS and spending all this money on these DPs and all this kind of stuff, blah, 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 blah. Look at little old Liga MX. You know, like, he's saying this ahead of the game in Estadio Azteca, which is like sacred ground. If anything, this should be the game where he's like amped up and being like, oh, now they're coming and they're going to see what real soccer is like. But instead, he's giving himself a way out.
Yeah.
This is just juicy.
I know. And you see this all the time in the Premier League now with like when a Liverpool or an Arsenal or any of like the top five or six teams have to go up against Man City, the sort of more experienced managers will come out and say, well, it's ridiculous how much money they've spent like over the summer. It's ridiculous. We can never compete with a team like Man City. It's just too much money, right? So they're already giving themselves out in the event of failure. But on to the
talk about the Red Bulls now. I mean, we'll see how the game actually plays out in Azteca. But yeah, Red Bulls 1-0 loss. How do you think Red Bulls performed? Seems like they're not in dire straits, not in great straits, but tell me your thoughts.
I mean, they didn't shoot themselves in the foot. Like we said the first time we tried to record this podcast, both second legs still mean something, which is nice. I said this before too, like when we talk about CONCACAF as an adjective is sort of like scrappy but almost violent, right? It's sort of like dirty play. And so that served the New York Red Bulls well up until this point where they had to play Chivas, right? So Chivas must have been watching the games. They understand what how the New York Red Bulls are going to come out and play, how it's going to be a physical game, one that sort of toes that line right between sort of like yellow card, red card, who knows. But I think in order to have a chance, New York Red Bulls really have to go at Chivas. And I'm saying this as somebody who loves Chivas, who tries to watch Chivas as often as I possibly can. The Chivas back four is like an MLS back four. It's very weak, and if you continually apply pressure, they're going to make errors, right? So whereas the New York Red Bulls have been sitting back and sort of soaking up pressure and working on the counterattack, I think they have to play a high line against Chivas and really pressure that young defense. Or it's actually not that young, but anyways, that's what I'm hoping out of the game.
Speaking of the weak defense, that weak defense just got weaker because the Chivas captain and defender Correa, he was suspended for choking whatever Red Bulls player that was. And so he's captain, defender, so missing his presence will be interesting to see how Chivas handles that as well. As you said, yeah, like it would be great to see the Red Bulls go more aggressive to try to push that. At the same time, they haven't really shown that ability. They've really mostly been a counterattack team. And you wonder if that strategy is just going to play right into the hands of Chivas, who has like attacking talent and
quality. Yeah, that's true.
And so if they're just like, okay, come at us, and Chivas is like, okay, we really would much rather come at you because we don't have the defensive stalwarts and behind us to absorb anything that you've got. So if that's the case, then it raises questions about, yeah, like, or it brings some doubt in my mind of whether or not like Red Bulls are going to be able to pull off the upset here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make any predictions other than for at least one red card between these two games.
Okay.
And a particularly juicy red card, that one that involves a 3-match suspension, perhaps.
I mean, if Club America just got CONCACAF'd in a hallway in Toronto, like what is going to happen to the Toronto players in Estadio Azteca? You know, like they're going to have to they're just going to have to walk through some sort of like fountain of urine being thrown at them or something, whatever it is that, you know, it's going to be an interesting game for sure.
Yeah, I'm really upset that I have to work that night, but I am looking forward to it. All right, let's real quick talk about the U.S. Women's National Team friendlies against Mexico. It is nice to see them kicking ass again, right?
Absolutely. We saw a really lukewarm performance from the women at the She Believes Cup. And then, but now, I mean, they put in such a strong performance against Mexico, dominated. You got the sense watching them score goal after goal that they just, you know, it's one of those things where like they score the goal and they're like trying to tamp down the celebrations a little bit because they don't want to rub it in. You know, when you beat someone 6-2, it's sort of like, okay, we got it, great. And that's the kind of game it was, and so it's good to see a game like that. Obviously, good to see Carly Lloyd get her 100th goal, and great to see a bunch of different people involved in the scoring.
It has been hard to see them sort of floundering or just not being as dominant as I'm used to seeing them perform. So these last,
yeah, they scraped by on as narrow a margin as possible for the She Believes Cup. Not that She Believes is like any sort of measure of true quality. It's sort of informal, even if it is the best teams or some of the best teams. But still, it was like you got the idea, like, man, we won ish. It was so close, though. It could have gone the other way. But yeah, I agree. Great to see them return to form and put in another performance like this.
Yeah. All right. Any last notes you wanna add before we get out of here?
Last notes. If anyone knows anything about this Michael Bradley mural, please send me an email. softtattooedmillionaires@gmail.com. We need to get to the bottom of this.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening. Also, you can tweet at us at softtattoofc. Thank you for listening. We did record this before the Galaxy game, so we yes.
Important pre-Zlatan disclaimer. Yeah, we're sorry if the LA Galaxy like file some sort of like separatist movement and separate from MLS and just go off into some sort of stratosphere on their own. We are sorry if we've been unable to cover, you know, whatever ridiculous bicycle kick Zlatan pulls off. But we will have a if Zlatan does anything that is truly remarkable, I promise we'll do a separate podcast where we just talk about that.
Yes, my bet is that he's an actual transformer. All right, that's all for us. Thank you so much, guys.
Welcome back, Becky Sabra.